Hello and welcome to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you. We appreciate you joining us today. It's great to be here. I'd like to extend some thanks out, first of all, to the United Steelworkers, as well as the AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, for their sponsorship and support for this and all our programming here at the Union Edge. So it's our pleasure to have up next a contributing writer to The Nation. Michelle Chen is on the line. Michelle, thanks for joining us here today on the Union Edge.
Hey.
So you have a piece here from just a couple days ago in The Nation talking about the issue of sexual abuse, sexual harassment in the workplace, and in particular, how this issue is being addressed by unions and organizations around the globe. And I'd like to start with where you started with this in terms of what in one workplace situation includes in terms of housekeeping, what they're doing by having an electronic device on hand to help them in case of an incident or something. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's Unite Here. It is representing the Chicago hotel workers. And so citywide, they managed to push through a local policy that would mandate that all housekeepers would carry, when they're on duty in hotels, would carry sort of safety alarm buttons. So it's just a small piece of technology that provides the added security of allowing them to immediately call for help if they encounter an assailant or some kind of sexual harassment or any kind of assault, really, on the job. And it's a basic safety measure, but it follows in line with what the union has also brokered in New York City, for instance, and is trying to institute in the cities where it represents hotels around the country, actually.
And tell us a little bit more about what exactly these workers, particularly in this industry, but others as well, are going through. It's not just guests or customers we're talking about here that with a rude comment or something like that when they encounter them in the hallway.
No.
We're talking about it's a much larger issue involving it's involving coworkers. Go on. Tell us about what they're experiencing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like all low-wage jobs, women are vulnerable at various levels. You know, they do often get harassment from guests, which again puts the employer in it's sort of an inherent conflict of interest because, of course, they want to please their guests, and the customer is always right. And yet, when your guest is violating one of your employees, you know, especially if you don't have a union, you might get booted back to human resources. I mean, generally speaking, the deck is pretty much stacked against you if you try to raise a complaint. There's also, on the level of just issuing the complaint, it's very difficult to hold anyone accountable for sexual harassment in the workplace. If you're intimidated, if you're impoverished, if you work in various precarious circumstances that so many women do today, you basically just lack the power on the job to really come forward with that kind of complaint unless you want to perhaps risk your livelihood. So that's another dimension of it. And of course, routinely, women experience sexual harassment, sexual violence, all sorts of gender-based discrimination, for that matter, both structurally and institutionally, as well as culturally and interpersonally when they're interacting, particularly with, you know, men in positions of power. It's not always the case that it happens that way. It could be among coworkers as well.
Sure.
So there are many different ways that this could reverberate in someone's life, and it often has really devastating economic as well as social implications.
Well, and sure, this is obviously a much larger issue. We've had this much larger conversation about what's going on here in our society, particularly American society, on this issue. But in terms of the workplace, and we're not just talking about the workplace in a hotel here in the United States, right? We're talking about, just to be clear, we're talking about, this is a global issue, right? We're talking about, and the differences between the global South and more developed, wealthier countries. And tell us about what's going on in that scope.
Yeah. Well, around the world, there is a definite push across labor movements in multiple countries, really at many different income levels, to look at this problem critically as a gender equality issue and a gender justice issue. Here's where you see a lot more of the language of human rights coming into policy discussions, as well as just, you know, in these countries, you know, there are some countries with very weak laws against sexual harassment and sexual assault, some with virtually none at all.
Sure.
And others where government regulation generally is much more accepted. And so that might be one place where women can wield more leverage. And of course, generally speaking, the United States is behind a lot of other countries in terms of just the presence of any sort of labor movement. So it's, you know, more frequent that you would have, in many cases, women represented in blue-collar service jobs, et cetera, you know, in other countries, for instance, in Europe. So, you know, there are different levels at which women need to be empowered, but the one context that brings it all together is that through an empowered workforce, you can do a lot to both represent the voice of women and really put women in positions of leadership, because it's not just about preventing harassment and assault. It's actually about making women more represented, more autonomous, and more able to control the conditions of their labor in general. So you know, Unite Here and the Global Federation that they're a part of, they've pushed through zero-tolerance sexual harassment policies at a number of companies. So they've done that through their collective bargaining, and they've done that through contracts. In other places, you know, you see efforts like Chicago, where people are pushing for more, for stricter legal frameworks that try to combat this on a more structural, systemic level.
Within the city of Chicago.
Yeah, and in other places like New York, and I think they're pushing for this in California as well. So, I mean, it's there's nothing stopping any one city from enacting something like this other than a lack of political will.
Thank goodness.
Depending on how powerful, you know, a particular union is or a particular workforce is, it might be easier to go the legal route. Might be easier to go the collective bargaining route. Generally speaking, you know, labor advocates will say that you really need to come at it from all angles. So, you know, just having laws on the books is not enough. You really need empowered unions to speak up for women on a day-to-day level at work.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you can have a law into place, but a law is only as good as it's being enforced. And sometimes there's remedies, legal remedies through the courts, right? But obviously, through workers being organized, they can fight collectively for these type of rules and put these things in place. And you talk about, too, it's not just about disciplining those who may be cause of the problem or commit these harassment, but also education campaigns and organizing for worker empowerment. But as you say, it really is about kind of changing that power dynamic by putting women in positions of power, so you don't have such a disparate sort of power dynamics across the board, particularly in some of these industries where they're really highly gender segregated, right?
Absolutely. And of course, you know, the labor movement in general is not immune, you know,
sure,
to all sorts of gender discrimination and gender segregation. And you know, it's perhaps no coincidence that the two largest service workers unions, SEIU, Unite Here, I mean, they've both had women in pretty top leadership positions in recent years. You know, on the other hand, we still have reports coming out of the labor movement in which there is worker sexual harassment and sexual assault and gender-based discrimination. So it's all of a piece. I mean, gender is a cross-cutting issue. It affects all levels of the workforce. The issue, as always, is power. And I think what the Me Too movement has done for the labor movement is that it's actually sort of, you know, peeled back some of the sort of the veil of secrecy and revealed a lot of these intersections between economic inequality and gender inequality.
Yes, yeah, certainly a lot bigger issues in terms of intersections, and certainly the within the the House of Labor itself, there are issues to be addressed as well as on this global scale throughout industry and our society. So I know we could talk more. We do need to wrap up, but how can folks find this article and all the other work that you do, Michelle?
It's primarily on The Nation, so you can go there. The Nation has actually been putting out a number of articles looking at labor and sexual harassment. There are also links in there to resources like the International Federation for Labor Rights and the IUF, which is one of the global union federations that's working on this. But more broadly, I mean, if you've got a union at your workplace, talk to them, see what they have to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good advice. Thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on the program.
Thank you.
That's Michelle Chen, a contributing writer for The Nation, with her article on sexual abuse on the workplace and what unions are doing about it. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you today on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.